Hello, my name's Kate Rolls and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust as you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's new artwork, One and Other. The date today is the 17th of August 2009 and the time is 6:20 a.m. If I can please ask you to state your full name, your date of birth and where you come from.
Hi, my name's Robert Taylor. I've born on the 11th of August 71 from Birmingham.
Lovely. How are you today, Robert?
Very well, thank you. Excited.
Yeah. What was it that motivated you to want to be part of One Another, to want to stand on the fourth plinth today?
Well, I first heard about it on the local radio and I just thought, wow, that's just something so different, and for 1 hour where you can just stand there in front of, you know, the whole of Trafalgar Square, it's just like, you know, it's once in a lifetime chance. You can't let that go and give it your best shot.
And when you found out that you had got a place and you were going to be on the plinth, how did you decide how to use your hour up there?
Well, it was kind of a given, because I actually only found out that I was got a place on the plinth about 12 hours ago, yesterday evening. So what I decided, I kind of had an idea already what I would wear, but what I would do, I don't know, I'm still thinking about that. Yeah.
Would you like to say a little bit more about your outfit and what you're wearing?
It's my hobby, which is essentially fetish. So I just love the whole feel of latex, the whole second skin feeling that you get over your body. And it's just a hobby of mine, yeah.
And one that you kind of wear in public.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a bit of fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Can I ask you to say a little bit more about that? About how what kind of reactions you get, I suppose, if you.
Sure.
Wear latex in public.
Essentially, 98% of public actions are all good. There's one or two bad, but that's water off a duck's back these days. So yeah, there'll be a lot of I don't know. So I suppose at the start end, you have your wolf whistles from people, other people coming up, shaking your hand, saying wow, etc. Other people saying, you know, they wish they were wearing the same as well. And other people obviously asking where we're going, what the event is and what it's all about. And a general people being inquisitive in a nice way, though.
Yeah.
And a complimentary way, yeah.
Good. And how about your shoes? I noticed you're wearing red high heels. Is there an element of cross-dressing in your
for the shoes? Yeah, but nothing else. It's just the shoes or the boots. Yeah, so it's not like dresses or anything like that. It's quite specific, really, in terms of catsuits, boots. In that way, yeah, it's quite specific, and you know, not like a blouse or not makeup either. Hat or mask, maybe, yeah, as an accessory,
yeah.
Or a whip, yeah.
How long have you been doing this?
Good question. You see, I went to my first fetish nightclub down by London Bridge. That was probably about 4 or 5 years ago now.
Okay. And what is it like, the fetish world? If you go to a place where it's public in this way, how could you describe it?
Well, a fetish club is different from a mainstream club. I mean, it's similar and different. You have your normal bar area, your chill out area, dance floor area. There will also be a properly run dungeon area as well. The whole safety aspect is a big a big thing, because otherwise people just wouldn't go. So there are house staff there that monitor things and look after things. One of the main important things is that you can do, or you can do, or you can't do, just what you want to do. You know, you feel you're free to do exactly what you want to do, what you're comfortable with doing and not do. And there's kind of rules as well. So let's say you're in the dungeon area and you could be tied up, spanked, etc. There would be people in the club wandering by watching. There's kind of rules where, you know, stand a couple of meters away, don't interfere, feel free to watch, but you can't take photos. And it's just that sort of safety and consensualness around the whole scene that I love about it. And the fact that you can also meet other people as well. Obviously everyone's like-minded, there's quite a strict dress code generally, and you get chatting to people, like-minded people, and it's great like that, yeah. Mm. Very friendly.
And you described earlier before the interview that it was a hobby of yours.
Mm-hmm.
How much of your everyday life do you spend wearing this kind of clothing?
How much? Most weekends, I would say. Not the whole weekend, but at some point during the weekend, we'll try out something, yeah. Maybe one evening during the week as well. Depends how things are, yeah.
Okay. And is this something that you've often, before you first went to a fetish club, was this something that you think was always there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is in a lot of people that I've spoken to as well. So since growing up, becoming a teenager, etc., it's something that has been there in sort of something lingering in your head, you know, that kind of thing. But then when you get a bit older, then you got some money and you got a job, and then you can come to London and then you can have the chance then to actually live through something and actually do some of this stuff that has been there probably for a long time beforehand. Yeah.
How open about this part of your life are you in your everyday life?
It depends. It depends who I'm talking to and who I'm with. Yeah. So, yeah, some people do. I'm quite open with others. Not. It's very variable, really. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm interested in the history of fetish, I suppose. Do you know much about that? And is there a certain set of kind of politics or anything that goes with it that you're aware of?
The history of fetish as a whole, you mean, as an entity? To be honest, not really that familiar with,
yeah.
Really. I think one of the general things I would say is the lack of... from my experience anyway, probably the lack of any politics, if anything, and it's just that free for all,
mm-hmm.
open, you know, you can do what you want to do and be who you want to be, etc. With so few ground rules, really.
Mm-hmm.
The only ground rules really are just basic, just be nice and don't be rude and normal human things like that, really. But apart from that, yeah, it's that openness.
Mm. And to be standing on the fourth plinth today, wearing what you're wearing, what's your thinking about that? What does that have special significance for you?
For me, it'll be a sign of hopefully, if I can encourage, well, if there is anyone else out there with the same lingering thoughts in their head about, yeah, I like leather or latex or whatever, but hasn't had the courage to do it, and hopefully it'll help them to do it as well, and help satisfy what's going on, yeah. And say, you know, look, it's not too bad. Mm. It can be done.
Yeah. Can you remember the first time you dressed like this in public and the kind of that, what that experience was like?
The very first time, yeah. I mean, it was essentially just a very short trip out the house, around the block, and it was in the dead of night as well. So it was an effort almost to try and not be seen, but then a car would drive past, for example, and then I'm thinking, a little, yeah, but then it just drove past and carried on. Mm-hmm. And then that happens a few times, and then maybe you'll do a little bit longer, and then maybe not just quickly round the house, but maybe down towards the local station or something like that. And it's very much an iterative process. Mm. You know, 1 week after the next, or 1 month after the next, just one bit. It's not as though all of a sudden one day you just wake up and then all of a sudden, you know, we'll go straight into Central London. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. How about other aspects of you?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to maybe talk a little bit about? I'll let you lead. What, if I was to ask who's the person on the plane today in your slot? What would be the first thing that would spring to mind?
I suppose just me in general, I suppose my education or background, that kind of thing, yeah. I was brought up in Birmingham, did engineering, that was at Cambridge, then did a PhD then in robotics at Oxford, then came to London working in IT, which I've been doing now for 11 years altogether. That's a very quick summary. Just a flash through the life, yeah.
Yeah. That's quite an achievement, all of that education and getting a PhD from those institutions.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like to experience being part of that?
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, yeah, my mates take the mickey sometimes because, you know, oh, you were basically a student for 8 years altogether at taxpayers' expense, etc., etc. But no, I mean, as an achievement, yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's work hard and play hard, all those student-y things that you yeah, from 19 when I started through to 27 and finished at the end, yeah.
Fantastic. What was your PhD? What was the title of it, if you can?
It was called AGVs, which is autonomous guided vehicles. So it's vehicles with sensors on them, but not remotely controlled by a human. So there was different sensors on the vehicles: laser sensor, sonar, cameras. In our little lab team, there's the research assistant who looked after the vehicle itself, and different students as part of their projects worked on different sensor technologies. The idea being that some sensors are good at some things and not others. So by combining a number of different technologies on the one vehicle, it's able to do a much better job than any one single or couple of different technologies. Mine was the laser scanning sensor, someone else's was the camera, someone else's was the sonar. Mm. Mm.
Fantastic. And have you continued your research since completing your PhD?
Since finishing, me personally, no. I mean, the project as a whole has carried on of sorts. The department tended to move a bit more towards medical side as a whole, so the actual robotic vehicle side tended to die off a little bit in favour of the medical, but the project has kept going to some degree, and it's been used as well with disabled people as well to help disabled people obviously move around, interact with some of this sensor technologies as well. So where it's not just a robotic vehicle, that we're guiding, but a person as well. The same technologies can be used in both.
Fantastic. And how did you decide to go into engineering, kind of for your subject matter for your PhD?
Well, that kind of led on from my undergraduate. That was in engineering. The whole science, that was just where I was at school, really. That was just all the subjects that I just found by far most interesting at school, and was able to achieve in, you know, the physics and the chemistry and the maths, yeah.
Brilliant. And you work in IT now, in what capacity?
Mm-hmm. It's doing networks, but it's external networks. It's networks that link us to other institutions, and managing those. So stock exchanges, that kind of thing, financial institutions.
And how do you find that?
It's interesting, and it's funny because you meet people who work, you know, not just for your own company, but the various account managers at all the other companies, not just British companies, but, you know, stock exchanges around Europe, for example, or broker firms around Europe, and just getting to meet. That's what I like, the meeting a wide variety of different types of people. It's funny, sometimes you have your classic sort of stereotype person from whatever country it might be, a French person or a Spanish or Italian type person that you might see on the television or on a comedy or something. When you're the account manager from that country, and it's like, well, that's a bit scary, because that's actually quite like the stereotype that you see on the television. Yeah. That's funny.
Do you find the industry that you're working in, you said it's a very diverse... Is it very diverse?
Absolutely, yeah. Very much so, and continuously changing as well. Yeah. You know, you build up a good relationship with someone in whatever company it might be, and then they'll move on or something, or moved on to something else, and then you start all over again. So that can be tricky at times, yeah, just when you're getting things going, you know, quick routes of getting things done. And then it all changes, and then you have to kind of start again. Yeah.
Have you got a line of work that you're kind of making your way through, in a way? Is there a sort of something that you're striving for, or have you got a particular kind of goal with your career, or your ambition in that sort of in your
profession? Yeah, I mean, the team I'm in didn't actually exist as a team 2 years ago, but this whole department was set up, and it was realised that there was a gap there, which quite handily for me was realised at the same time that I was just about being made redundant from my previous company. So that was an opening there, and essentially it's build this up now, because I was first person in the door, so like, right, this is a new area where we're building up a team. So and we've got another guy now, and there's a big project regarding a data center move that we're doing now, so we've recruited a third person 6 months ago. We're in the process of recruiting a fourth person now, so steadily things are building up, so we'll see. Obviously right now anyone that's recruiting, you know, is always a good thing. So we'll see how it goes.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Would you like to say anything about your background? You said you're from Birmingham.
Yes.
You live in London now.
Yes, that's right. So yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of friends and family and things back there. So I was part of a cycling club, well, still am, in West Bromwich. So there's a lot of friends through that, and been on cycling tours as well around Europe, and, you know, the Alps and the Pyrenees for tours. They've been quite some experience, yeah, like last year Geneva to Nice, for example, across the Alps. Yeah.
What was that like?
Amazing, yeah. The year before that we did one Munich to Milan. So there was four of us there, because I own a tandem, now. So me and one friend did it on that, and there's two other cyclists as well. So going up over the mountains is one thing, but then doing it on a tandem is quite another, because you don't really see them, because it is hard to climb specifically with a tandem. It's faster on flats and downhills, but climbing is harder unless you're with someone who you've been regularly cycling with and you know exactly how each person works. Absolutely amazing. That was a lot of fun.
I bet. Was it quite exhausting?
Yes. I mean, average we did 40 or 50 miles a day, which, given the terrain, you know, is going some, yeah. But it was a lot of fun, though. You know, we did some of the climbs where the Tour de France goes, and you can see all the riders' names, where the fans paint the riders' names on the road, on the tarmac. So you're riding up, you recognise the names all the way up climb, yeah. And we coincided one of the tours with the Tour de France as well. So we did the climb in the morning and then sort of pitch camp on the top and waited for the tour to come through in the afternoon, which is better on a climb because the riders are going slower and they're more split up, so you can actually see the riders properly rather than, you know, whiz past in 2 seconds flat. Yeah.
And that's with your friends in Birmingham?
That's right, yeah, around Birmingham. They came down because the Tour de France was in London a couple of years ago, and it came through Woolwich, basically right past my house. My house is 3 houses from the end of the road, and it came down there, so they all came down to watch the tour come, basically, because it turned off the main road. It was quite funny, I didn't really expect it. It turned off the main road to come through my estate and then rejoin the main road again at the other end.
How about your would you like to say a little bit about growing up in Birmingham, your upbringing?
I mean, I've got one older brother. My upbringing was second to none, really. I can't fault it, really. You know, my mum and dad were great, supportive, etc. Encouraging me to do the things that I wanted to do and the things that I was interested in. It was fantastic, really. And I had a friend of mine who moved in next door to me when I was 4. He was 6, so we've been lifelong friends ever since. We used to, there was a big tall fence in between our two gardens, so we used to play badminton over it, which was funny, playing badminton when you can't see the other person. You just see the shuttlecock disappear over the fence and then just stand there and wait. And then it may or may not appear. And when it does, you don't know where it's going to come from. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. Those kinds of experiences. Yeah, we used to do that a lot.
What about the experiences that have really shaped you as a person? Are there any that sort of stand out?
Oh, crikey. That's a question. Man. That's a question I have to think about. To be honest, you know, if I was to put my finger on one thing, I don't know if I could, and say yes, that was one life-changing moment or something like that. I don't really think I could. It's just been a question of, you know, little steps at a time, and you know, just generally being encouraged in doing. Just, you know, doing stuff, you know, stuff that I've been interested in, whatever that may be it cycling or whatever. It's all been supportive and encouraging. So beyond that, I'm not really sure what I could add in terms of an actual life changing moment as such, really.
How long have you lived in London?
Since, when I finished Oxford, so that was 98. Yeah, so 11 years now. Yeah.
And how do you find London?
I do like it, to be honest. I've thought about whether, you know, some kind of smaller village would be more appropriate. I don't know. I tend to find, well, I'm happy to be corrected, with village people. people who live in smaller towns or smaller villages, you know, your neighbours know exactly what you're doing, all times of the day or night, blah, blah, blah. Oh, hello, hello. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just popping out, you know, etc. But in some ways in London, you know, the whole huge urbanness, and some in some way a little bit of anonymity that you can retain, I like. You know people say, oh, these days nobody knows their neighbours, and that's a bad thing. I mean it's good to know your neighbours, but I don't know, in some ways maybe you just keep a little bit of distance as well, you know. So I like London for that, yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. What about beliefs? Have you got any religious beliefs or political beliefs? Anything like that?
To be honest, I've no. I haven't really. I don't know. For want of a better word, I haven't really got time to spend. Because like any hobby or interest or whatever, it's all time and energy and stuff, so whatever gets you going or whatever doesn't get you going, so in terms of that kind of thing, really I'm quite easy going. So if someone, but in some ways as well, you know, so if someone else does have a particularly strong belief about something, I'm not going to be of the opposite opinion, because I'm quite easy on that way anyway, really. I'm just happy to listen to someone else's view and, be happy for them, if you like, if that's the right thing to say, you know, rather than disagreeing with them, just, you know, that's someone's view and we're all entitled to it, you know, so that's great.
Do you know much about your family history?
Yes. My brother is very big. He's done some actual genealogy and interviews. One thing that we found out, my dad's probably going to kill me now for saying this, is that it was my dad's nan was born of a manor house near Evesham, which is south of Birmingham, just past Stratford-on-Avon. my dad's nan or my dad's great grandma was the child of the son of the lord of the manor with the maid that worked there. So it's like, uh-oh. Yeah. My dad's nan, I think, the sort of, because obviously this was like going back, you know, at least one century now, and the usual stigmas that get associated or did get associated with, being born out of wedlock, etc., etc., etc. So it's not something that's easy to find out about. It's nothing. No, there's nothing formally written down in the records, because that, you know, it's all of like off the record, etc. So that's an interesting story, really. And of course, now we're like, oh, Lord of the Manor. What? What's going on there? Does this manor still exist? Is there any money in it? Blah blah blah. What am I entitled to? So I mean, we're all kind of pretty sure that nothing is the answer. But it's still interesting little twist, yeah.
And what do your parents do?
My dad is an engineer as well. So maybe there's something in the genes there. Yeah. My mum works for BT as a document designer, effectively. So it's using the Microsoft Office package for doing designs and presentations for various departments or managers or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, good. Going forwards now, what's important to you in your life?
Just doing what I choose to do for myself and not being hindered, and just maintaining a good life, and just staying happy and all the usual stuff, not being restricted, and just doing the things that I enjoy doing, really. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add about yourself or about taking part in one another?
About myself, we've covered quite a lot there, I think, actually. There isn't a lot left. But I'm really looking forward to today, though. Yeah, the next hour. I'm looking forward to it now, even more so now. I've just had this review of my whole psyche. I'm thinking, oh my gosh. Yeah. We'll give something to think about now.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. You too.